Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome back to episode 13 of BS Talk with Irv and Cam. I'm one of your hosts, Cam. Irv, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Cam. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, this is kind of like my relaxing from basically all of work and everything else. Just talk about sports and I guess BS talk with you. But we got a good one for you today. Before we get into it, Irv, do you want to tell where people can find us on Twitter?
Yes, that is at BS underscore Irv and Cam. That is at BS underscore Irv and Cam. Please get on Twitter, follow us, leave comments, go ahead and use the poll surveys and tell us who's right, who's wrong, or if we're both wrong. Use that Twitter and get at us.
And we also appreciate your feedback on that. If you want, like, we read our DMs. And we also read what people post on there. Even if they make fun of me or Irv, it's mostly me. But that's all right. I'm used to it. So with that being said, let's get into topic one with our sports. We're going to start with the NBA. If the Lakers don't win the Western Conference, who does? And can they win a championship? Also, how do you feel about the addition of Ben McLemore to the Lakers? Irv, you go ahead and lead this one.
Okay, so we had a off-recording conversation we were talking about earlier in the week, and me and my co-host, we like to sometimes jab at each other throughout the week. It's a great thing to get a text message and be like, you were wrong. So this is one of the conversations we were having about if we don't feel like the Lakers could win, who do you think could come out of the West? My personal take is the Phoenix Suns. I really like the way they're playing together. I really like the way Devin Booker has accepted the challenge, both offensively and defensively, to lead the team. When I say offensive and defensively, we already knew Book was a juggernaut offensively, but he's not trying to be hidden defensively anymore. They're not putting him in the corners like, okay, you know, go get the third best scorer, fourth best scorer on their team. They're having him go against guys like Paul George, like Kawhi Leonard. They're having him take on those challenges, and he's accepted it, and he's done a very good job to this point. So I think the Phoenix Suns will be those individuals who could potentially come out of the Western Conference and win it, and also if they might be able to win a championship this year. I see them just having Chris Paul, that floor general, sky's the limit. Getting to the Ben McLemore take, I like the addition of Ben McLemore. I like the addition of another three-point shooter, a guy who can play the small forward or two-guard position. With some of our guys like Wesley Matthews having some issues offensively, KCP sometimes not being there offensively. Both guys, and Wesley Matthews and KCP, both give great effort on defense. But we need somebody who can knock down shots in a critical moment or knock down shots consistently. I think adding Ben McLemore was a great move because you add a high three-point shooter. Now, statistically, I believe he's been around 40% for his career. This year, it has been a falling off for just his single-season three-point percentage. But hopefully he can rectify that with us this year as he gets some open baskets or open shots when LeBron and AD comes back. Right now, everything is contested just because, you know, you got to play team offense and team defense. But when AD and LeBron get back, all the attention will be on them. So that'll provide him a little bit more opportunity to have open looks at baskets. Cam, what's your take on the Western Conference? And if the Lakers don't win it, who can?
So everybody's heard from past podcasts. I've been on this Denver hype ever since they got Eric Gordon and JaVale McGee. They've since that pickup, they were already in a win streak, and they continued that win streak. They have won 8 in a row. And that's not with, that's including when they got him. So after they got him, I think it's 4 now in a row. They've won 9 out of their last 10 games. So as Lakers are kind of dropping off, you see the Nuggets moving up. I think they have the potential to win the Western Conference and then make it to the championship. I liked your take though on the Suns. Like you said, Chris Paul he makes a team always a little bit better, and Devin Booker, not a little bit better, a lot better. If you look at it, they brought up his statistics on ESPN, how much better every time he joins a team that team becomes. And then you mentioned Devin Booker's been he's been going off. He's coming to his own. You could tell he feels more comfortable and confident when he's shooting and playing, and he's being a little bit more physical even because he grew into his body. I liked your take on Suns, but I'm going to go Nuggets, and I want to know why kind of – are we overlooking – I know this is another question on top of what we already asked, and I'll get to the Ben McLemore in a minute, But are we overlooking the Utah Jazz, or do you think they're just overrated?
I don't think they're overrated. I just don't think they're true contenders in the playoffs. Like, well, I think they can get to the playoffs. I think they are a very good team. But I feel like there's something lacking or something missing when I watch them play, like championship vibe. I feel like they're the Milwaukee Bucks of the West. No, for real. I feel like the Milwaukee Bucks of the West.
I'm just laughing because you know I like the Bucks.
I'm just saying, like, they're a really good team. They're a team you're like, man, these guys are legit in the regular season. But when they get in the playoffs, it's just they just don't have it. I know last year they had some injuries, some key injuries. So that's why they had a sputtering and a little bit of a downfall in regards to playing the Nuggets and losing in that seven-game series. But they were up. Yeah. And they came and they lost. And they really didn't do anything in the offseason to like get better or get worse in regards, they just kind of stay neutral. And I think in the NBA, like bringing back guys and staying neutral is never really a good thing. Like you got to have small changes or changes somewhere to help you when you get back to the playoffs and get in those situations. So I don't think I think they're a contender in regards to like getting the playoffs, but I don't think they're a true championship contender.
Did you like what what's his name said off of, I forget his name, off the Mavericks? He's not even a big superstar player.
So you're talking about Finney Smith. Yes. Yes. And when he said, and I quote, everybody told me to shoot. I got Gobert. Everybody told me to shoot. And when they showed it, and I'm not trying to go after Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert, don't jump in our DMs or come at us foul or crazy. But it was true. Like when you saw him play, he was like, yo, Gobert is jumping on everything. Like he's jumping at everything that Finney Smith does, and he's not even doing hard pump fakes, and he's getting to the rim. Like if anything, if he shoots the three and he makes it, you tip your hat, Rudy Gobert. But don't just fall for everything and bite on everything. And what can you say? Finney Smith had a tough game. He, helped lead the Mavs and beat the number one team in the West.
So I find this funny because I listened to – a lot of different podcasts, and the NBA analyst, or used to be an NBA analyst for ESPN, Mino Hassan talked about how when Rudy Gobert won Defensive Player of the Year, there's a lot of players in the league that kind of just snicker at it or send like funny emojis through Twitter and everything. Like, how is this guy it? How is this guy? Because everybody knows like if you're a defensive player, you're supposed to have no weaknesses, but Gobert has lately shown those weaknesses. And Irv, you've pointed them out completely in previous episodes of these weaknesses and the point of attack. So, do you think he's always been overrated defensively, or do you think he's aging?
I think he's always, if I'm going to have to answer straight up, then I'm going to say he's always been overrated defensively. I like Rudy Gobert, and I've said this before, he is a great big man when it comes to team defense and being a key part of just being an anchor. Hey, try and rim protect, definitely rebound, catch some lobs. Alter shots, because you're not in the NBA, we know you're not always going to block a shot. Sometimes it's going to be considered goaltending if it's coming down, or sometimes you're going to hit a guy, you're going to body a guy into the line. But you still want a guy who makes shots more difficult for guys going down the lane. And I think Rudy Gobert does a great job of that. But when you say he's some type of defensive presence and stopper, and no, he's not. He's not a guy where you're like, I fear going down the lane at him. It's, does he have the better angle on me? Because like when you look at it, if most people say if you're a guard or if you are a wing and you're going down the lane at a shot blocker, you got to get into their chest. And a lot of these dudes sometimes, because of the Euro step now, they're trying to float away from the rim. They're trying to, you know, Euro step and get away from it and throw up a high arc or throw something up. And he's athletic enough and he's good enough where he can block those. What you notice when he gets in trouble is when you get guards or wings who go downhill and they're going at him. Because now he's trying to engulf them and he's trying to jump up and put his hands over the ball in regards to like blocking it instead of being straight up. And that's where he gets in trouble and gets in foul trouble. And I don't understand why more teams don't do that. But it's a different game, different era nowadays. So I think he's overrated. What's your take on it?
I think he's always had these weaknesses. And now people have really figured out and exploited them. Doesn't mean he's not a good defensive player, in my opinion. It just means I don't think he should have been considered defensive player from the get-go. I think he stole one from Draymond, one of the awards from Draymond, in my opinion, one year. But that's...
You mean the best defensive player
ever? Yeah, that guy, he need, like... That's another thing. Draymond is one of those players where, like, he says something that you're like, you know, that makes sense. Like, he calls out Rodney. Like, they remember when he's going after Rodney, a tough guy? Rodney Gruder. A guy named Rodney's the tough guy? And that was so funny. And then he says things to Kelly, never been confirmed, but Kelly Olynyk. Not Olynyk.
Oubre Jr.
Saying, we had Andre Iguodala come off the bench. And we all know who said that. It's probably Dre, most likely. And he's like, and this guy won't come off the bench? Because Dre's going to speak his mind. But here's the thing with Draymond, is then he'll say something that's completely out of my mind. Like, he has no, I don't know if he's just so confident in himself or he has no self-awareness of, like.
He has no filter.
Yeah. Like, cause, dude, like, I mean, you're good at defense, but I'm not saying you're the best defender ever. Because remember in that finals versus LeBron, they couldn't have you guard him. Because you were that big, you were a defensive liability. LeBron was getting whatever he wanted, so they put Andre Iguodala on him, and that just contained him. That didn't mean they stopped LeBron. That contained him. So if you're the best defender in the world, don't you think you have to be the person that guards the best player? And you weren't doing that. That's just my take. Really quick, let me get back to the Ben Lackmore. Sorry, Irvine. Did you want to say something on that with Draymond?
No, I think he pretty much said everything. I agree. I think Draymond's a great defender, but I don't think he's the best ever. And it was just maybe it was one of the things he has to tell himself, like, you know, sports confidence, you know, I'm the best ever. And yeah, that's what you use to go out. You put the battery in your back to go out there and play hard. So that's what I think it was. I don't know if he really meant he was the best historical defender ever. That's not true by any means. But go to the next take, because we can take all day.
You have that one friend that, like, when they play sports with you, they think they're just, like, really, really good, and they're just not.
Honestly, I don't have that friend, because I dog all my friends. We are dogs, and we love each other, but we run in a pack. But if you start doing things that's just not part of the group and not part of the pack, you get bit. We go after each other. So that's why I love my friends, because if I was like, I'm the greatest offensive lineman to ever play at the University of Idaho, I probably about all my friends that play football, I'd be like, you were one of the goodest, greatest players for our team, but you are not the great. Like, it would be so many shots fired from people I know more than people I don't know.
But you know, that's what happened with Draymond. Like, people were firing at him, but he didn't care. Like,
yeah, but not all those people are like his close. Like, I'm talking about your close peers put you in order and get you going, get you right. You don't listen to the outside world, especially as an athlete or as anybody, really. You don't listen to just people that aren't in your circle. It's your circle that'll help you get back on track and affect you.
So really quick, I wish Sean was on this week too, because Sean knows this, because we grew up with a kid that we were good friends with. And he thought he was the greatest athlete of all time. And we would tell him, no, you're not good. Your shot is garbage. Your shot is this. And he really thought, like, we try to, like, you know, like minimize how big his head was getting. But he really thought in his head that he was, I don't know. Anyhow, back to the Ben Mclemore thing. He's been bouncing around the league, got drafted by some Sacramento Kings. He's always had a high ceiling. And every team that picks him up usually hopes that he can contribute and hit that high ceiling, or have moments of that high ceiling, or have a game or two in them for the playoffs. I'm hoping he has a game or two for us leading up to the playoffs. And then in the playoffs as well helps us out, because I'm scared about our Lakers right now because of the injuries. And I'm worried when they get back together, are they going to have that ability to still maintain the chemistry? Or are they going to have to, like, restart that chemistry all over? And it's they got me nervous, basically.
I think you should chill with being nervous. I think if anything, if we get to the sixth or even the seventh spot losing, but we can maintain and at least get into the playoffs, or even if we get trapped in a playing game, we'll probably be the most dangerous lower seed out there, especially if we can get LeBron healthy and we can get AD healthy. I think chemistry will always be something you have to work on. But I think the way LeBron's leadership is, he's proven, like, even at trade deadlines where they, you know, when was it? They had, like, IT, they had Derrick Rose. They had all these different dudes that year that they went to the finals. Dwayne Wade, and everybody was like, you know, he built a super team out in Cleveland. And they end up trading all those dudes away and getting those new guys. you know, typically when you get all these new parts, it's hard to figure out each other. But LeBron kind of like fast-tracked it in a sense. And, you know, the camaraderie, the basketball knowledge is always there. Basketball is, you know, you learn X's and O's. But I think his leadership ability will be able to fast-track the camaraderie and the chemistry. And I think we'll be the most dangerous. Like I said, if we get to that level of seventh or eighth, we'll be the most dangerous seventh, eighth team in the playoffs. And I think we will be able to do some real damage as long as guys stay healthy.
True. So really quick, I'm looking at Ben McLemore's contract and his stats and everything. And I have nothing to say about this player because I think he has a high ceiling. And a lot of teams look for him to try to hit that, and hopefully he does. And I think he has a lot of potential. But I just want to say something. That if this isn't the most Sacramento Kings thing ever, I don't know what it is. So they drafted him, and he spent 4 years there, right? And then he went to the Memphis Grizzlies in 2017 and 18 season. And then afterwards, I believe he was traded, or I'm not sure if he was traded or he signed again with the Sacramento Kings later on. The Sacramento traded him to Memphis. And then after he traded to Memphis, he became an unrestricted free agent. And then he went back to Sacramento afterwards. It's the most Kings thing. You know what I mean? Like that, how that organization is run.
Man, that's Vlade Divac right there in a nutshell. Like he be doing some stuff that make you scratch your head. And like they've had some really good teams out there, some real rough teams that were just like they had Matt Barnes, DeMarcus Cousins, IT. They even had Rondo, and I don't think all those guys were on the same team together, but it was a combination of those guys together, and they was looking to make a playoff push, and then they traded Boogie, and you was like, what? Trade him to the Pelicans in an all-star break. And you're like, why would you trade your best player? Like, and y'all could potentially make the playoffs at the eighth seed and do a little work because y'all a good team. I don't know what was going on with Vlade Divac and his GM move that he was making, but he's not there anymore, so look for them to start making different moves. And I'm not a Luke Walton fan as a coach. I'm not. But I think if they replace Luke Walton as a head coach and they get somebody in there who really understands how to utilize this young talent and get them to start playing together, because they're good. They have a lot of talent. Like, you look at the Kings, and they're not the Kings that's just going to get blown out. They're going to give you a fight, if not win.
Fox is good. Fox is good.
Fox is good. Taylor Haliburton, I apologize for screwing up your name, the rookie. He's good. They moved Buddy Hield to the small forward position, even though he's really a two guard, but he's a good shooter. He's got still working on his defense, but is a really good offensive player shooter. They got Holmes. They got Harrison Barnes starting at the four. Like, I watched them play, and I'm like, man, this is a good team, but it just don't seem like that the coaching there is able to utilize them properly. And so, I like I said, I'm not a Luke Walton fan. I'm not hating on Luke Walton. I just don't think he's the coach for them.
Fair enough. I think Luke Walton would be a good assistant coach. Okay. I mean, even when he was with the Lakers. So let's move on to our next topic, or if you want to hit us up with that.
Okay, so the NBA topic today is the Monstars out east, a.k.a. the Nets, almost at full strength. What does this mean for the league? So, Cam, I'm gonna ask you this question. With the Monstars still not at full strength, and yes, I'm referring them to the Monstars because that's all they are, a bunch of Monstars. Like, I don't understand how the league didn't veto their acquisitions, because they got LaMarcus Aldridge in a buyout deal. That James Harden trade was a little funky to me, but then when they let Blake Griffin get bought out as well, previous to LaMarcus, and they picked up Blake Griffin, it's a lot of head scratching. But the Monstars, Cam, what do you feel like they will be at full strength, and what do you think this means for the league?
They're legit the Monstars, because if you watch Aldridge and Griffin before they came there, it's like they didn't have that secret juice. Like they were still good, but it's like they weren't trying as hard or something. And then all of a sudden they get over there and they're motivated again, and they're hitting shots and they're dunking out of nowhere again and this and that. It's like, okay, whose powers did they steal? Because all of a sudden they got their powers back, because Aldridge has been popping off for them. Because they haven't been in – it must be nice being like, oh, we, this game. Kyrie, you played last game. Just sit down for this game. Rest a little bit. James, it's your turn. James Harden, go get him. With Aldridge and Griffin. Oh, Griffin, you need to rest. Griffin, you sit down. Okay, Kyrie, James, you're out there. Oh, our best player still hasn't played a game yet, and we're almost in first place in the East. Or we are in first place in the East. And our best player hasn't played a game. And now, oh, wait, well, let's have him come off the bench now and play 17 minutes. I know I got that wrong. Played 19 minutes and scored 17 points. So when this team starts getting all together, remember, there's one ball. If they're hitting their shots, they're going to be hitting their shots. If one of them's off, they're going to pass the ball to the next person. The only weakness I can see, the only weakness. Now I'm going to get some analytical stats going here. The nerd's coming out of me. Is their defense. Okay, so the only one that is known for their defensive ability is KD. Now KD's coming off an injury and he hasn't been the same defender as he has in the past. So if you want to put defenders out there, then you have to take one of their good players off. So if you're putting Bruce Brown out there or give me an, I can't think of off my top of my head real quick.
Lualu Kamaru.
Did you just give me the worst name on the team? Or did he play? Because I haven't heard this name.
No, his real name is, it's like, I want to say Timothy. They call him
Timothy, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I know what you're talking about now. But like, even Landry Shamet, or sorry, I probably pronounced that. Go ahead, pronounce it right, Gerb.
No, you was right.
Oh. Shamit?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know how to pronounce it. Jeff Green, these defenders, and Bruce Brown, like, you're going to have to take one of them off. Would you even say Joe Harris is one of their top defenders at this point? Three and D kind of players?
I wouldn't say he's a 3-and-D because, like, he's definitely a 3 guy, but I think his defense is still, he still needs somebody behind him, big man-wise, to help him. He's not a leave-him-alone kind of guy or let him kind of switch off on certain players. Like certain guys, I don't think he's able to switch off on. But go ahead, sorry.
Gotcha. So what I'm saying is, why I'm bringing up the defensive point, they're going to be like, oh, if we score 140 points a game, why doesn't matter? We'll just outshoot our players. Well, if they score 141, then the other team wins. And this brings me to a great point is, I didn't pull up the stats myself. I heard them from a different podcast. I forget what podcast or I'd call them out. I forget which one. But there hasn't been, outside of the top 10 NBA champion, outside of the top 10 defensive rating for a whole team. So if you're out of the top 10 for defense, they haven't won the NBA championship since 2001. And that team was the LA Lakers in 2001. And basically when the LA Lakers won that, they were a good defensive team. They just didn't want to play defense, I guess, during the regular season. And then they turned it on in the playoffs. So this Nets team rating right now, and they were like 11th too. They were 11. They weren't like, they were barely outside the top 10. And that was in 2001, the last team that's been outside the top 10 defensively to win a championship. This Nets team, now again, you know, all of you know I hate the Nets. I don't hate them. I just don't care for them. And I want them to lose because of all the teaming up they've done. This defensive team for the Nets, they're ranked 25th in the league. They don't play defense. So if you watch some of their games, when they're close games, their first close games versus like, watch the Knicks, or when the Knicks played them. Like, I watch that game and I go, wow, the Knicks can actually beat this team because they don't play defense. So I'm just wondering, when they do run into a team like the Heat, who are a really good defensive team in the league, when they're full and healthy, Heat are ranked 6th in the league in defense. So that will be, I want to see what happens then. They're still going to get their points, but I think the Heat can maintain them. The 76ers are 2nd in the league in defense. Let's see what happens when they face them. The Lakers are 1st, so tonight it's Lakers versus Brooklyn. And I know Lakers have their 2 top stars out, but if you watch, the Lakers, if they can keep up with, hold them defensively, then the Lakers will be in the game. So as much as I say this, I'm pointing out the weaknesses of how to make them lose, basically. But that's my take on the Monstars. They're going to get their points, but I don't still think they're going to win it because they don't play defense.
I just want to give a little bit of context to what you said when the Heat played Brooklyn. Now, the first game they played, it was 128-124 in favor of the Heat. they beat them. The second game did Jimmy play? I don't know. I would have to look it up.
I think that's when he had COVID.
No, I don't think they – no, it was at Bam Adebayo because Bam went crazy and they still had Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah.
Bam had 41. The second time they played, Brooklyn lost again, and it was 98-85. Now, obviously, the rosters have changed. New pieces have been added to Brooklyn, just like new pieces have been added to the Heat. And the reason why I brought up the Heat is because that was one of the better teams you brought up in regards to defense, in regards to this aspect of it. But if you go down the line, like you talked about, and you talk about the New York Knicks, who are the Tom Thibodeau team, and I'm looking at the Tom Thibodeau team that played, who hasn't really made any moves in regards to, like, before the trade deadline. Like, they obviously they traded and got Derrick Rose, but, like, at this last deadline, they didn't really do anything. New York took an L to them, but the score was 109-103 the first time they played. The second time they played was 98-96. So teams, like you said, that lock up and play defense give them a run for their money. Go ahead, Cam, if there's something you want to say.
I think they played them one more time than what I'm seeing, because there's this last game they played them is 114-112, the Knicks versus the Nets. And they barely, and Irving went off on that game. Irving had 40 points, and he did work. And I think James Harden wasn't playing, and Durant wasn't, or Durant came off the bench maybe. I don't think he played actually, no.
Okay, well, my point to try and help with your point is basically the teams that do play defense do have stand, and I mean like play defense hard, and those defensive teams do stand a shot against the Nets right now, because as high-powered offense as the Nets are, and this is a completely different Nets group, they still, like you talked about, lack in the starting lineup individuals who can lock in defensively like that, even outside of KD, with KD still coming back and, you know, getting his legs underneath him. I am not a Nets fan, nor am I, like, against the Nets. I'm kind of neutral. I'm just like, I believe this team has enough to get to the finals. I believe this team has enough to get through the East without any real issues, because if there's so much pressure on a team to keep up with them scoring, and when you can rest certain guys like James Harden and KD and Kyrie, and you can get certain production out of Blake Griffin and out of LaMarcus Aldridge, and then those bench guys come in like Shamet, Timothy Cabarrou, and Joe Harris. And we're not even talking about some of the other guys that are on there. Tyler Johnson, he was a Heat guy. He was with the Suns. He can shoot. Yeah. We're not even talking about DeAndre Jordan, who still can rim protect a little and get rebounds and catch lobs. So, and they added another dude. His last name is Johnson. What's his first name? Alize Johnson. And that guy's been playing a lot lately. So when I look at the Nets, I'm like, they haven't figured out their defensive identity yet, but offensively, it's just so much pressure on another team to try and score that. They truly are monsters. Like, you say, okay, we're gonna dedicate everything to the guard position or the front court position. And now you're getting killed by the front court. And you look up and Blake Griffin is going to town, and he's had a couple dunks here and there, but I've been more impressed with Blake Griffin's footwork when he gets on the lower block, because he has a little jump hook, he has the mid range shot. He's kind of playing almost like that Tim Duncan type role in regards to, like, he's blocking shots. He's playing pretty good defense. He's able to switch on other guys. But really, when you look at him, like, he gets in a lower block, turnaround hook, turnaround jumper, or just little things like that. And now you got KD back. And I look at that lineup and I go, Kyrie, James, or I should say James Harden, because he'll be the point guard. Kyrie at the two guard, KD at the three, Blake Griffin at the four, and LaMarcus Aldridge at the five. But realistically, 3, 4, and 5 can just sub and switch out and pick and roll and do whatever on their own. Like, you can literally go tell both those guards, hey, just go at the top of the key or go to the corners and wait for us to just do our thing in the middle. Like, it's ridiculous. And
they have a lot of different offensive opportunities.
Now, this is going to be the problem. This is the problem I see. And the only thing that can really break them up, because people talk about chemistry, camaraderie, all those dudes, they're going to be fine together when it comes to chemistry and camaraderie. When it comes to them getting along. I think they'll be fine because they're all already willing. They're all willing and ready to sacrifice to get a ring. That's what they all want, is a ring. KD wants a ring in Brooklyn because he feels like the other rings potentially, everyone's saying, is tarnished because he went to a Warriors team that didn't need him to win it. I'm throwing that out there.
But it's basically the worst than the Warriors thing what he's doing here.
I'm saying like that's kind of like what social media has like gathered. Yeah. Like he should have went to this team. Him and Kyrie would have won it together. Then it would have been special. Now it'll probably be tarnished, just like the ones he won with the Warriors. Kyrie already had a ring. Blake wants his first ring. DeAndre wants his first ring. LaMarcus Aldridge wants his first ring. James Harden wants his first ring. But that, all of that, they're willing to sacrifice for. Let me cut this short. Who's going to take the last shot?
Oh, I think KD does.
But this is the thing. We all say KD is the alpha. KD is the last shot guy. What happens when you're KD and you get the double team and it's not a lot of time left on the clock and you got to pass it? Who are you going to – because now you got so many guys out there who can play. Who are you going to give it to? Because you're not in the moment, you're not thinking about – oh, who had the hot hand before, or who's made their last three shots, or who's been on all of that like that. In those last couple waiting seconds, usually you just know your number two guy. You got your number two guy. And the Nets don't really seem like they run a lot of, like, they run set plays, but a lot of it is like, hey, just go out there and hoop. Just go out there. You guys get it together. You guys figure it out. You guys talk amongst each other. You guys are professionals. I'll call timeouts as a coach. I'll give a couple set plays here and there when we need to be back in rhythm. But you guys just figure it out. Go out there and have a good time. If I'm on the Nets team and I'm a backup guy, even if I'm not, like, just as who I am now, you ask the question, who's going to really take the last shot? Because we all say KD, but what if James Harden has been hot this whole time? Do we run plays for James, or do we, you know, put the ball in our finisher, our closer's hand? That's where I think it's going to get iffy, because in crunch moments, you don't have time to think about all that. Somebody just got to be able to just hoist up, and you got 3-4 guys who can do it. Really, you got 3 guys who can do it. But are those dudes going to start passing out of those opportunities saying, oh, well, we got these guys to help close games instead of just taking over being a closer? So that's just kind of what I think could be their downfall, is not knowing and defining, I'm the finisher.
Some big games that are coming up for them is Lakers tonight. I know Lakers don't have their stars, but
that's not a big game for them.
Lakers don't have it is for me, because I want to see how Lakers can defend. I think they can hold in there. I don't think they're going to win the game, but I think they can contain them and hold in there, because defensively, Lakers are still first defensively with having AD out, who's one of the top defenders in the league, and LeBron's out too. So if Lakers are still first defensively team, I think they can contain them. The next game they're looking forward is the Phillies on April 14th, and then the other game is Miami on April 18th. All those are in top 10 of defense, so it'll be interesting to watch.
I'm going to say it like this, just in this part of it. I think they're going to come out and try to crush the Lakers. And the simple reason is because Bron and AD are on this travel list. They're traveling. They're going to games. And I think it's kind of like one of those games where you send a message like, even if y'all was playing, it don't matter. Even if you, no, like, seriously.
Yeah.
I think they're going to try to crush the Lakers. And I mean, like, I don't know if KD starts that, but this might be his first start, might not. I haven't been able to look that stuff up. But even if he doesn't, if he comes off the bench, I think they want to send a message to them like, y'all, this is not a team that y'all going to have to take lightly. And both of you guys, whether it was one of y'all playing or both of y'all playing, the feeling y'all see right now that they going through, y'all going to have that same feeling. I feel like it's going to be one of those type of games where they're like, we're trying to beat y'all by 30. We're trying to beat y'all by 40 and embarrass y'all, period.
It looks like Harden's out for this game. I'm pretty sure it's something like that. We actually have a few people out too. I think it said Alex Caruso is day-to-day, Marc Gasol day-to-day, Kyle Kuzma day-to-day, Davis out, LeBron James out, and you know Dudley's not playing for the rest of the year.
I was going to say, Kuz didn't play in the last game against the Heat, so this might be like his questionable/return game. But yeah, maybe we got too many guys out to even really consider this game. Like, I'm going to watch, obviously, because I love our team. I love the Lakers. That's my favorite team. But it's just one of those games where you watch, and as a fan, you just got to say, hey, man, like, as long as we can just, you know, keep fighting and we show improvement and we do some certain things, this is just a footage game. This is the game film. So if we do play them in the finals, we say, hey, when we play them back at this date, you guys weren't here, but this is the offensive set. They like to run out of a timeout. This is certain things. So check it up as a film game.
My other question is Tucker Horton out because of suspension for?
He should be back because he only had one game and he already served that.
I'm trying to see if I want to be a degenerate and take the 10.5 spread for the Lakers or or if I should just.
I can't answer anyhow, that question. I can't answer that question. So my job don't get on me about it. I answer that question.
All right. Let's say, do you want? I'll say the next topic.
No, I got. Oh no, go ahead. Cool. Go ahead.
All right. We're gonna go over to the NCAA women's basketball, women's and men's basketball. We'll start with the women's game. Irv, I know we talked about this pregame show, basically about the game and their take on it. It was an awesome game. You told me. Go ahead and explain what you told me.
Okay.
Describe the game.
Okay. So what I told Cam was this game was like a true heavyweight fight, and I mean like the Lennox Lewis versus one of the Klitschko brothers fight, or you know Holyfield versus Tyson in a prime fight. Like this was a great game to watch, and I mean it wholeheartedly because they just went back and forth. They went at each other. You never felt like I never felt like this one of these teams is just going to take over. I felt like it was a dogfight from start to finish. Now that's where we get into a little controversy is the finish. So for me, I don't know what the deal was in regards to the play called. Obviously, none of us do. The coach would have to come out and just like literally walk us through what she called or what they might have discussed in a huddle, and they don't have, and she doesn't have to. But the young lady, Erin McDonald, had 22 points. Her closest teammate that was helping her score, Pellington, she had 15. So I understand putting the ball in her hands. What I just don't understand is Stanford ended up when she was able to free herself, get herself free, when she got down towards the three-point line. Now, she was 4 for 9 from three. Overall, she was 5 for 21. But from three, she was pretty solid. She was 4 for 9. I don't understand how they don't run, you know, some pick and roll for her or just some pick action for her. How they just don't screen for her in general just to, like, get open. It was kind of like, okay, go one-on-one. But as soon as the other two defenders from both sides came at her, I just didn't see her teammate come over the screen. I didn't see a teammate just to, you know, get open and say, yo, throw me a bounce pass. You know, I got the shot. And she was forced to take a real tough shot, and she completely missed it. And she had, you know, they lost. But I don't feel like a three was needed. I feel like at that time, like, if they had ran some, you know, some screen actions or did something else, like, she would have been able to get it to another player or get to her spot on the court. You know, players got spots, whether it's at the elbow, whether it's at the top of the key, in regards to the free throw line or at the very top at the 3-point line. Like they have certain spots that you want to get them in. And I just didn't seem like that. It seemed like she got the ball and it was like, go win it. I know you have a different take on this, Cam, but that last play, it don't sit right with me. So go ahead, Cam, give me your take on that.
So, we both agree on that the last play, it doesn't sit right, but for both different reasons why we don't agree on it. I want to start by saying the women's game was a lot better than the men's game.
Facts.
It was better to watch back and forth, and it was exciting to watch. And I don't know. Before I start criticizing everything, these D1 women athletes, they're better than me. Okay, so when I'm going to be criticizing out here, talking about skill set, I'm not criticizing from basically saying they're not as good as men. What I'm saying is I think the skill set was a little different because they're way better than I will ever be. They're quite the athletes. But if you watch that last play, I think the coach failed her by not setting up a screen for her to get her open. Right off the bat, she just kind of popped open. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe they just let her get open like that. So that was cool. I mean, it wasn't cool, but they just got her the ball, which I was like, that was too easy. They didn't even set up a screen for her to get open. She's got it at the top of the key. But then when she got it at the top of the key at the 3-point range, she didn't, I don't know if she just, like usually, like if you watch Kobe or Michael, which that she was trying to be in that case, they make a move towards the basket. They make some kind of attacking play. She sat there dribbling and didn't make dribbling, but dribbling in the same spot at the top of the key, not making an attacking move to the left or right. And I understand that she was starting to get collapsed on, and her one teammate on the baseline on the right side started going down. Now, everybody knew who was going to get that last shot, and everybody knew, like, if she made it, they'll live with it. If she didn't make it, they'll live with it. Like, nobody's saying she didn't do a great job. I am, and here's why. There's Michael and Kobe, and that's what she was going for. The Michael and Kobe last shot, you give it the best player takes the last shot. This is, and I don't side over there. I side on with more of where LeBron comes from. Where LeBron is the best player on the floor, but he sees that there's a better percentage shot with a teammate when he's getting triple team or double team, and passes it off and trusts his teammates. Now, he gets criticized for that all the time, saying, you are the best player, you need to take that last shot. And it's one of those where I understand where people are coming from when they say that. I don't agree with that. LeBron's making the smarter basketball play. So in that last play, she sat there, the top of key, and I've kept rewinding this in my head, just kind of because I knew we were going to talk about it. So I watched it over and over, not just in my head, but also on my screen, like slowing it down little by little. She didn't make an attacking move. She stayed at the three-point line. You didn't need a three. You're 4 for 9 from three, 5 for 21 overall. You see the other players starting to collapse. Your teammate starts going down, which you, in that about 3 seconds, you could have passed it to her. She was right there, and she could have took 1-2 for a layup and won the game. But also her teammates knew that she was going to take that last shot because you could tell by her body language there was no other play. There was no other design in that play. She was getting that last shot. So as much as I don't want to, like, there's this thing, like, I'm going to criticize, but I understand where other people are coming from when she says, no, that's the right play to do. I understand where people are coming from saying that. I just don't agree with it. And if people don't agree with me, that's okay. They're entitled to their opinion. I'm entitled to mine. It was a beautiful game. She did a hell of a job leading that team. She is a leader. She's a scorer. I don't know. I'm not sure if she had the skill set to make an attacking motion like I've seen with LeBron, with like Kobe and Michael, or if she felt comfortable taking it from the top of the key. It looked like she couldn't get to her spot because of what was going on. It was stagnant at the end. And I wish there was more of a kind of proactive motion to get that last shot. And again, it didn't have to be a three to win that game.
I agree with that. I agree with it. It didn't have to be a three. I don't know. It just feels like this is one of those questions where it's also like a teammate, or I should say basketball IQ. And I'm not questioning any of these young ladies' IQ, saying they're not smart. Please don't get. I'm just making a reference to sometimes as players, you have to work. You have to use the play that's given, but you have to make the best decision out there for your sport, or for the sequence that's going on for your athletic competition. And it was just one of those things where you were like, man, I don't know why a teammate just didn't, you know, run at her to, you know, give her a screen and give her an opportunity to get open. Or it's just certain things that you look at that game and you go, man, it feels like there's so many different options or so many different things that could have been ran or done in order for them to get off a true shot, like an actual shot that, you know, 50-50, you either make it or you miss it.
Which what you brought up is great. It leads me to think, what kind of went on in that coach's huddle? You know, what did the coach say? Was the coach like, no, this is the shot. This is what we're going to do. There's no other option. Or was there another option, but did that player, like, did the coach have the other options, but the player kind of chose to not do those? So we'll never know because we're not in that huddle. And I know that her teammates are going to back her up. You know what I mean? Like, you make or miss that shot, your teammates are going to back you up. I would say most of the time, not all of them. I know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had to give you the side eye on that one because not all the time. Sometimes that causes controversy within a team.
But I got a feeling that most of those ladies, though, would back her teammate up saying, no, we wanted her to take the shot. She led us here, so on and so forth. I'm just saying, like, I just look at that girl that's cutting towards that basket that at 3 seconds, you can easily just bounce back her chest pass and get a little layup there and probably go on the win. And then you look like you're, because they just collapse on her and she didn't get, it did not look like a comfortable shot.
Yeah, that's
I'm done talking about it now.
Yeah, I'm gonna be done after this part. That's the part I don't get. Like, we've all played a little bit of basketball or even football. We've all had like different plays and opportunities where something doesn't go right for your teammate, and you got to be there for your teammate. So it was just one of those things where when your man left you, like, there's two things you could have did. Like, you can cut to the basket hoping she sees you, like the young lady you said, or if you see, okay, they're going to trap her or they're going to double her, you can run with that person to help set a screen, because when you get there, their main focus is, you know, making sure they double team her or stop her. You can get, you know, a good screen set. She can bring, because she hadn't stopped her dribble. She hadn't stopped her dribble yet. So you can get, you know, get there and have a screen that won't be a moving screen, like set a proper screen and have her go around you to get a better opportunity or better shot. I just, there, like we said, it's a lot of different things that could have happened, but that's just one of those ones where I look at it and I'm like, that's one of those IQ plays for me where I'm like, as a player, you just kind of, you gotta break the break whatever's done in the huddle or whatever play it's called. You gotta break that, and you gotta, you know, just do a have a athletic, or I should say not an athletic, but you have to have a intellectual moment as a player, you know, within your sport, and say, let me go help or let me go do this. But on to the men's game.
Hold on, one more thing. I just want to say, ladies, thank you for a great game overall. Like, that was an awesome game to watch. I appreciate it, because the next topic we get into about the men's, go ahead, Herb, because I was not that impressed.
Okay, I was going to say thank you, ladies, because you did give us content for this show, so I do appreciate you. As for the men, Gonzaga, which, you know, I've been in Spokane area, shout out to Gonzaga, and Baylor, that was not a game. I'm sorry that I'm about to be real critical of this one. It was like a big brother and a little brother going at it, and big brother got sick of the little brother and just said, let me go ahead and whoop on you. And it just looked like Gonzaga had no idea, like, Baylor was going to be this physical, that Baylor was going to come out here bigger, faster, stronger in some sense, and just dominate. And that's what they did. They just dominated. It wasn't even something where I was watching and I felt like Gonzaga really finna make a push and come back. I was like, Baylor just beating them up. I don't need to watch the rest of this. I'm going to go ahead and do something else. Like, I'm serious. I'm not even trying to be rude or disrespectful to Gonzaga. But when I watched it from the jump, I was just like, I know this is like going into the half. It's only a 10-point lead. But this don't feel like a 10-point lead. This feel like Baylor's out there just doing what they want to do, and they missed a couple more shots than they should have, and they should be up even more. Like, that's what it really felt like. And at the end of the game, I was like, yeah, that seemed about right. That seemed about right. So I don't really have a take in this whooping that they had to go get. What's your take on it?
So, okay, here's a little backstory of me. Remember when Adam Morrison played for the Zags?
Yeah, I was out in Idaho at that time, yeah.
Okay, cool. Because ever since then, I have not liked the Zags, ever. Like, this is going to be, like, one of those things where, like, when they make the tournament and go in, I always say they're overrated. Because they also play in a conference, which I think is a little bit weaker from what they're in. And they just tear them all up, usually. And I will always say, I just don't care for the Zags. Now, with that being said, I will give them the props. I did think they were where they were not overrated this year. They were where they belong this year. They played some very good teams along the way, and they played them very well. But I do not care for the Zags. Now, with that being said, going into this, from the moment it tipped off, you could just see Baylor was coming out there, and they were like, we're just going to manhandle. We're going to put these other men in their place a little bit, and we're going to manhandle them. They're going to be physical. We're going to be athletic. We're going to go at them.
Wait, they're the Baylor Bears, right?
Yes.
You might as well just say the Baylor Bears put them paws on them.
They put them paws all over that dog. The Bulldog didn't stand a chance. But here's where it upsets me is a little bit of fundamentals here. Baylor in that game out-rebounded them. They got those second opportunity points, second chance points big time. They out-rebounded in total 38-22. Out of the 38 rebounds, 16 of them were offensive. That's 16 extra possessions that they're getting from the Bulldogs. 16 offensive rebounds. Gonzaga overall only had 22 rebounds that game. They almost, in offensive rebounds, equaled the Zags alone. Those second opportunity points, they're going to add up. So although it shows the Zags shot better, it doesn't matter if you don't box out. And it doesn't matter if you don't play defense and you collapse on the rim. I'm just wondering, like, they kind of made the adjustment at halftime of collapsing on the rim more, but it was too late. Because the first half, they just manhandled them underneath the rim. They said, no, we're getting this. The Dennis Rodman theory is what they went with. Like, that ball is mine. And that was Rodman's theory. I'm going to get that ball. If I have to jump over somebody, I'm going to grab that ball. That ball is mine. So when you're getting out manhandled like that, it's going to be a rough night when you let 16 offensive rebounds.
Well, look at the free throw percentage as well. Like the Zags, the Zags were, what were they? They were 15 of 21, and the Bears, the Baylor Bears, were 16 of 18. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. They were 15 of 21 for the Zags, so they were 71.4%, and the Baylor Bears were 16 of 18, and they were 88.9%. So even free throws, they attempted less free throws, but they made more free throws.
Yeah, I mean, you can even give them the free throws, the Zags, the free throws, and it still wouldn't matter just because of they just got manhandled and they weren't hitting their threes like they're used to. You live and die by the three, but
they didn't hit the they got out rebounded. They didn't shoot a higher. They didn't get to the line. Or they did get to the line, but they turned over the ball. Like, everything was all bad for the Zags, except for overall field goal percentage in regards to just shooting.
And you can't.
You won that one. Congrats.
And then what I kind of look at, too, is like, okay, was this game kind of evenly called? And it was. I mean, each team had, the Baylor Bears had 19 fouls, the Zags had 17. So they just got out rebounded at the end of the day.
Okay, this is gonna sound real.
The second half changed points.
Can we just get off this topic? Because they get like it's no more we can talk about this. The Bears just went to work. They came with their hard hats, and the Zags just didn't come in the building at all. They was outside the whole time.
Really quick, I'm gonna go back to the women's game. I know I sound done. I say you have to make your free throws. It's very important. I know you probably practice them in practice. But she had this opportunity to win that game at the free throw line before she would try to shoot that three. I think she missed three of the free throws at the end of the game,
You talking about the Airy McDonald young lady?
Yes,
She was 8 for 12 for three free throws,
and I think she missed three at the close to the end of the game. Which
you can live or die by that.
I'm just saying.
I understand what you're saying. Like it's points when you look at the overall game. You look at the points, but like. Realistically, they still had a chance to win it at the end, and that's kind of what – you know how it is in sports.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a chance prior to this, but I still had the chance at the end to win. So it is what it is.
If you make one of those free throws, you go into overtime.
All right, Cam. All right.
I just pointed my head and tapped at everybody that's – you can't see me. And Irv's just looking at me just cracking up.
He think he Carmelo or LaMelo right now hitting it with three to the dome. So –
So we're going to go – I have some topics I want to talk about with Irv. I've kind of written these down. This is kind of the new age basketball, Irv, that's been going on, you know, small ball, three-pointer, shooting this and that. I want to know your thoughts of watching this basketball compared to watching older basketball. Do you like it more? Do you think it's the same? What's your opinion on how basketball is nowadays compared to back then?
Back then was a lot more physical, and you got to see – better defensive games. You got to see games like teams winning 86-84 or 93-85 or something like that. Like that's kind of a rarity nowadays because the game is more of an offensive game and everyone has to have some type of skill set offensively, whether it's a three-point shot, mid-range, something. Even the big man, like back then, big man stayed in the key or around the key. Now you got him all the way out to the 3-point line and drifting at the mid range line and coming more out of the elbow area, a little bit more extended. I think both games are awesome and great to watch. What I like to see the NBA kind of be a little bit more towards the defensive side now. Yes, just because I feel like the offensive fouls or not offensive, but the defensive fouls that are getting called are just, they're making it to the point where like you can't touch anybody. You can't even, you know, bump a guy without it being a foul. Like, and just literally a bump, like you're driving to the basket, you know, you're trying to cut him off, it's a foul. And if he makes the layup because you didn't really hit him that hard, you didn't really push him off his path that hard, it's an and one. So you're starting to see these 115, 128, 130 point games. And it's cool to watch in the moment, but when you really like take a look at it, you're just like, man, this is, there is no defense in the NBA. And yeah. We say there's two-way players, but how can we really have two-way players? Like, you can't really play great defense and not get a bunch of fouls. Like, you can't be physical with somebody.
So what would you do to try to improve it, to make it more, a little bit more physical, where, what would you do?
What I would do is I would actually just retrain the refs, the officials, to be able to use a more of a judgment about like what's really going on in regards to like hitting or a movement. So like a guy drops his shoulder all the way down and then comes back up, I can understand why that's a foul, because you're powering up, you're lowering your shoulder to, you know, come like push through somebody. But if a guy catches a ball and he just bumps him with his shoulder, I don't really think that should be a foul. Now, if he leads with the elbow first and then comes in with the shoulder, I can see that being a foul. But there's certain movements I feel like basketball players get fouls for that it's just ridiculous. And even like blocking shots sometimes, like your natural reaction to block a shot is to, you know, raise your hand and kind of cuff it because you want to, you know, you're trying to hit the ball. Well, a lot of the fouls get called because a guy might stand straight up and he cuffs his wrist. And that's a foul. And I'm like, I don't really feel like that's a foul. I feel like a foul should be if his arm is like intentionally coming down, like if he's trying to swipe motion, then I can see that being a foul. But if he's all the way, hands fully extended, arms all the way up, and he cuffs his wrist down and you call a foul on that, I'm like, that's kind of just dumb to me. So I would just look at helping the refs out and the officials by giving them more of a lighter work. I shouldn't say lighter, but like retraining them to say, okay, these kind of body movements or hits, let's not call that fouls. Let's not have those be fouls. Because then you get players arguing with officials and going crazy at officials. And I feel like that could kind of help with it as well, because you're like, oh, my hands were straight up. My hands were straight up. And he's like, you cuff your wrist. It's a foul. Yeah. I feel like that'd eliminate that instead of saying, hey, your whole arm was coming down or you pushed down on him. You came down on him in regards to body motion. Like, that's why it's called a foul. Then I think that eliminates a little bit of that. Not always. His players are going to complain. You know that.
So, what I would like to do is bring back hand checks.
Not with Kawhi and all of, man, these dudes, these big old hands, they kill somebody. I think
you bring back the hand checks, and I think that would limit the three-pointers, as many people taking the three-pointers, and you'll have your mid-game, range game come back a little bit. Because what I've been seeing a lot of is, like, it's not even the defender touching now. It's the offensive person lifting their arm up and getting that contact and even pushing off and getting that contact and then acting like they got hit, although they created that. Like, they literally put their arms up, got hit, and they throw up the ball, and they're like, and they get the foul call. And it's like, the offensive person, like, he literally, like, you could see.
He initiated it.
He wasn't trying to get a good shot at off. He was just, my arm, like, I seen somebody getting elbowed in the face the other night, and I go, and they called it on the defense, and I was like, his arm is like this, like it's going to spear in somebody. So I was like, you know, bring back the hand check. Irv, my question to you is, if you had to bring a player from the past besides Michael, because that's not fair, besides Michael Jordan, if you
could besides bring a player, Michael and Bird?
Bird. Besides Michael and Bird, if you could bring a player from the past and bring him to this new age of basketball, and you would think they would dominate, who would it be?
I think they would dominate. I have to go with one of the Laker greats. I would have to say, like, James Worthy.
That's a good pick.
You know, Worthy was a co-player with the goggles. Elgin Baylor just passed a little bit ago, so rest in peace, Elgin Baylor. He was a guy who could have probably came out there and just got what he wanted at the rim. And I'm right now I'm on Laker greats. If you wouldn't have caught me off guard with this one, I could have got a plethora.
Well, it's just one of those things where you gotta, like, it's, I mean, we could have thought about this, but like, for instance, for me, first person that comes to my mind is like Charles Barkley.
Ooh.
Barkley would have been, because he reminds me of, he was not that, he was, remember, he's not the tallest person in the world. He's like a Draymond. He's like a Draymond, but I think Charles could have defended the three-pointer even better than Draymond. And then if Charles worked on his three-point shot, he could have been hitting those three-pointers. So I think Charles Barkley would have been a good one because he could defend the big man and he could defend the point guard. And my next one would be, this is going way back, I think Bill Russell would have been just fine in this. Bill Russell, about 6'9", 6'10", 215, lanky. I think he would have been able to guard the point guard and then also guard the centers at the same time.
So he would have been Magic before Magic, because he was Magic before Magic.
Bill Russell was?
Yeah.
I didn't know he ran point. I thought he was just played center.
He was everything in regards to that, like to a team. I don't mean like his position wise, sorry. But I just mean like overall, he was that dude. And if you drop him in with his old school, like he still got the same old school mentality, or he grew up nowadays. Because if he got that old school blue collar, I'm coming to work. Halftime. Bro, he wouldn't be fouled out. He would be going to work. Because a lot of these dudes don't have that all day mentality like them dudes had back in the day. Back in the day was way different. Like, this was really their job. Like, I know guys will say, this is my job, but that was really like, you know what I mean? I grew up on a farm. You know, I get up at 2 o'clock every morning to do all this stuff. Then I go to practice. Then I go to school and then practice. And like that mentality of working hard was a different type of working hard. Like you see it in your grandparents. Your grandparents get up early and they're productive. As soon as the sun is up, they up. Yeah.
That's me. 5 a.m. Come join me. Anyhow, the only thing I see Bill struggling with is he couldn't hit free throws too well. He shot about 56% from the free throw line. So that just tells me, like, I mean, they didn't have 3-point back then, so I can only imagine what it would have been like for him. But Charles, he did 76% for the free throw line. His 3-point isn't the best percentage overall, but I think he could have been just fine. I think he could have extended. So Charles Barkley would be mine. Is there anything else you want to go with, Herb? We've been up to an hour now. How about I get to the polls? Why I get to the polls, Irv? We're going to have a segment called Irv's kind of
My movie critique.
Yeah, there you go. Critique. I'm struggling over here. Critique. Because we are BS Talk. We don't want to make it all about sports. So, Irv, go ahead and hit him with the movie you watch and how you critique that.
Okay, so like everyone else, I was really waiting on that Godzilla vs. King Kong to come out. And I was not disappointed. Period. End of discussion. I enjoyed the movie thoroughly from start to finish. I enjoyed a lot of the plot and storylines that they had. At the end of it, it was cool just like to see it. Now, spoiler alert: if you haven't seen it, there's probably about 3 big fight scenes between Kong and Godzilla, and all 3 you need to watch because they have significant representation in regards to like score, like 1-1, 2-2, that kind of stuff, or you know, anything in regards to like who wins one, who wins two, and in neutrality, I should say. Also, at the end of the movie, probably going to be a little bit confused. I'll probably talk about it next week in regards to it if you haven't seen it, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody if you still haven't seen it. But the end of it was kind of cool and kind of left you with that. Okay, they're going to make another one, but what direction are they going to go in? Are they going to go in a direction of more King Kong or a direction of more Godzilla? Or are they going to make them not best friends, but like we understand mutually, like we have a respect for one another? But it was a fantastic movie. Kids would like it. You get to see all the cool stuff from what they call kaijus in the movie, which are the giant monsters fighting, doing all that cool stuff. And you get a little bit of the humanistic side of it. So I definitely recommend it for anybody that is just into, you know, monster movies, or if you're just bored and you want to check something out, it's only like an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. So go ahead and catch it and check it out and let us know what you think.
Perfect. So while Irv was doing that, I pulled up our Twitter. Again, you can find us at Twitter and then @BS_IrvandCam. There we post basically stuff we talk about from the show and have you vote on it. And get our fans kind of more involved with their show so they feel like they're a part of it. That being said, last week's poll was, did the Chicago Bulls make a mistake trading for Nikola? Oh my goodness. Vucic?
Nikolai Vucic. Vucic is his nickname. So Vucic.
Let's go Vucic. Listen.
Yeah, Vooch. Go ahead and
we,
just say
we
Vooch.
Talked really quick about this. We talked off air for quite a bit, Irv and I, debating still, even from last week's episode, on this whole thing and how it's going to work out, because we're still going back and forth, and we'll see what happens. We're going to leave it off air, but I've written it down so we can bring it up later on in future podcasts from now, because I even have other things I have written down from like what we said earlier, like my, I think the Nuggets winning, so on and so forth. Anyhow, so Vooch, check out episode 12, see who you agree with. It came back where I was 100% correct. People agree with me on the take. I there appreciate was, there, that. There,
I got a question about
it. Had that, about that 89 vote. Votes.
I got a question about that one vote. So I'm going to let him win this one, y'all. I'm going to let him win this one. But I need to, I'm going to go ahead and do a further investigation about the, that voting. Even though I was the one who put the polls up for y'all to vote, I need to question the person who was voting, or the voters, I should say.
I want to see who that one vote was too, because it was not me. I wish it was me, but it was not me. With that being said, we're going to probably head on out. One more thing, rest in peace, DMX. Thank you for bringing us some great songs and mentoring some of the best rappers and hip-hop artists there are. So thank you for that.
Facts.
So all of you have a great weekend. We'll catch you next week. And see you later, and make somebody smile.
Later.
Nice work.